Mike Page, can you lead us in it today?
Absolutely. As I walk in the room, you follow me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you, Mike. Next item is approval of the agenda. If I could get a motion. Thank you so much. And a second. Thank you, Jeff. Are there any opposed? Hearing none and seeing none, we will consider the agenda approved, and we'll go on to item 5, consider adoption of the committee meeting summary from June 5th, 2025. Can I get a motion? Thank you, Jeff, and a second. All right. Are there any opposed? And hearing none, we'll consider those meeting summary adopted as well. So we have two items this morning. We'll get right into it. Our first item is a mutual aid program presentation from Inland Empire Utilities Agency, or IEUA. And we have presenters Lucia, do I have it right? Diaz and Edward Makowski. So thank you guys so much. Yes.
Did you want to do attendance?
Uh-oh, I missed it.
Yeah, it's okay.
Went right by it. Yeah, let's do introductions. We'll send the mic around. If you could state your name and what your affiliation is.
Tony, Mojave Water Agency.
Charlene Endron, Mojave Water Agency.
Elizabeth Fratt, Mojave Water Agency.
Marissa, Mojave Water Agency.
Jeff Gaster at Newberry Springs.
Mike Page, Mojave Water Agency.
Holly Shralapour, NRCS.
Cody Tompkins, VVWRA.
Darren Polson, VVWRA.
Esmeralda Velasquez, Mojave Water Agency.
Delilah Boyce, Mojave Water Agency.
Mike Schweitzer, Cal Rural Water Association.
Bob Statham, High Desert Water District.
David Fick, Joshua Basin Water District.
Richard Pedersen, Town of Apple Valley.
Megan Closedes, Bighorn Desert View Water.
Gary Lazara, Top Notch Networking.
William Aldridge, Bighorn Desert View Water.
John Burkhart, Bighorn Desert View Water Agency.
Rod Miller Boyer, Bighorn Desert View.
And do we have the list up on who's attendance online?
Let me see if it's letting me share. Give me a moment. Give me a second. Should be able to see it from the outside.
Okay.
If not, I do keep a record.
Okay. And if anybody, we can always provide a list of attendees online as well. So sorry for getting ahead of things. We'll bring you guys back up for your presentation. I know it's kind of awkward to be turned from the dais, but hey, these are the guys that are important out here. So I'll be seeing your screen.
All right.
Well, my name is Lucia Diaz. I'm the Manager of Facilities and Water System Programs for the Inland Empire Utilities Agency down the hill in City of Chino. And this is...
Yeah, hi, thank you. My name is Ed Makowski. I'm the Collection System Supervisor at Inland Empire Utilities Agency also.
We'll just wait to get our PowerPoint up. All right.
Give us one moment.
We're good? Oh, yeah, much better. All right, can everyone hear me okay? All right, perfect. So we're here, we were asked to come to present on our mutual aid partners' spill emergency response training that we do down the hill. And this is a presentation that Ed and I have been doing pretty much across the state as of late. And it's been something that we are both very passionate about. It's something that we do at our agency, and so I'll just go ahead and get going. This is, well, unfortunately there's no sound, but it's really cool. This is our mutual aid spill drill that we do annually, and this, I'll let you guys read what's going on here. This happened this last May. It's just really catchy music that you'll be hearing. So as you can see, this is a hands-on training. It's a spill drill that is done with about 100 different people. We have about, I think for this one, we had 11 different agencies participate at this event. This was our largest event, and we probably will never go this large again. It's a little bit, it's a lot to handle. So what we're going to go over today is we'll go a little bit over our service area and a little bit about our background, some of the operational challenges that we've had. We'll go into our mutual aid agreement and our partners and what our regional training program looks like, what spill simulations like the one you just saw, and I'll talk about our drills, and then go into a little bit more into our training events. Also, we'll touch on how this is appropriate for the statewide sanitary sewer system general order, that lovely WDR that we all have to follow, and how does the mutual aid partnership help you with that, and then we'll go into some of the mutual aid support events that we've actually had throughout the few years that we've been doing this, and when I say few years, it's about 20 years. So IUA, we're a wastewater operation, so we serve 950,000 people. We have 242 square miles of service area, 5 wastewater treatment plants, and about 89 miles of regional collection system, and then 69 miles of our non-reclaimable wastewater system. And then we manage about 52 million gallons per day of wastewater on a regular basis, and then about 34,000 acre feet of recycled water, which is supplied every year to our region. And I'm going to hand it over to Ed.
Yeah, so as Lucia mentioned, we have 5 treatment plants throughout the Inland Empire located in the City of Ontario, Chino, Rancho Cucamonga. We serve, again, about 950,000. So we have a pretty large population that we serve. We also have a vast area that we cover. And so this program really is helpful when we're trying to be in a lot of places at once. Pretty hard for us to cover this much territory with a crew of 7 guys and a couple of combo trucks. So we do rely on our member agencies that, you know, are the cities that are in our service area to kind of help and coordinate when we are responding to emergencies, especially. Again, we have 136 miles roughly of gravity sewer system, 11 miles of force main. We only have a couple of lift stations, so we're fortunate on that aspect. So it's mostly gravity system. But we do have, as Lucia mentioned, 2 different systems. We have a regional system and a non-reclaimable system. So the regional wastewater, we do treat at our plants, but the non-reclaimable wastewater, we just kind of convey through our area, and then it ends up going to LA County or Orange County for further treatment. So some of the issues we see on the collection side and then in the plants are things like this. The first image there is a nice chunk of grease that came through one of our plants, blocked the headworks grinder, plugged that up, obviously a huge mess. So grease, definitely an issue in the collection systems. Everybody's seeing that. So something we're constantly fighting. The next few pictures are rags, and that's another issue. Ragging, whether it's in the collection system or getting to the treatment plants, causes tons of problems. So obviously, we're trying to mitigate those risks and remove those rags before they get to the treatment plants, but here's a couple of examples of what happens when they get there. That one on the far right was from February of this year. As you can see, that grinder plugged, and that was a few hours of rags just piling up before somebody got in and was able to get there and take care of that. But this isn't a plant, so it's not so much of an issue, right? If this were to be blocking a pipe in the sewer system out in the street, whole different set of problems, which is where our mutual aid partnership really comes in when we're talking about issues out in the streets.
So looking at the mutual aid agreement, we established it in 2004, so it's a little over 20 years. Basically, it ensures collaboration for effective emergency response during a water, sewer, and any treatment service disruptions that we may have. And it's about really just providing emergency response to those, our neighbors, and making sure that we can help each other out. And it's a formal agreement that we have. IUA serves as the lead, coordinating a lot of the efforts and making sure a lot of the events and meetings are organized and they continue happening throughout the year. There's a lot of collaboration and knowledge exchange. That's one of the key pillars of this, is just the knowledge exchange, because a lot of us are seeing within our staff is those long tenured employees are starting to retire, and we have the next generation coming in, and we want to make sure there's that transfer of knowledge happening. These are our partners. We have a number of our cities within our region, other districts, and we have two that are just sitting right outside our boundary lines, which is Harupa Community Service District, who is to the east of us, and then on the west side, we have the city of Pomona, who is on, they are not in the agreement quite yet, but they are participating and working with us, and shortly we will be getting them part of the agreement. But as you can see, we have basically all our member agencies within our service area as part of this. This is another video from the training that we did last year. This is the one that was held at our treatment plant. So we do a lot of marketing in regards to making sure we're sharing the information that we're doing and showing and showcasing the work that the guys in the field are doing. So with these videos, when we're getting ready to set up for an event, we usually do like a quick little 30-second video as like to post on social media to get the guys ready and say, save the date, this is coming. But it's also a recap. It acknowledges and showcases the training that was done, the people that were there, and it's a great way for the state to see that we're getting things taken care of in our service area.
Yeah, so another aspect of this is our, obviously with the emergency response network, is our contact list. So all the member agencies that are part of our agreement provide contact lists. So we have their on-call numbers for emergency services for each agency. We have the supervisors, leaderships, lead staff listed. So if anybody needs to contact anyone, we have this form going around that we update quarterly that gives a constant updated list. So we have the most current contact information, so we know who to call if we need assistance or we need to provide assistance or report an issue to one of the local agencies that are in our service area. Along with the list of contact information, we also keep a running list of equipment that's available. So we know how many trucks each agency has, pumps, backhoes, loaders, anything that may be used, you know, in an emergency or in a spill scenario, whether it's down to an 8-inch plug all the way up to a combination vehicle. So we have a good running list, and we know when somebody gets some new equipment. Not everybody has an 8-inch pump, right? That's pretty big pump, right? We have one of those. So if somebody ever needed it and it was an emergency, hey, you know where to get one. Our thought is good luck calling a contractor at 2:00 on a Saturday morning, and who knows what the response time is going to be there. But if I know there's one 2 miles down the road and I can call somebody and they can get that over to me, hey, we're saving time, we're saving volume, we're protecting the community, which is the entire, you know, basis of our operation. What this also has transitioned to over the last few years is training. We've taken the training to another level. It started with 5 or 6 agencies, I think, the first time we did it. We did some bypass training, some spill cleanup. But every year, it's grown and grown and grown. And what we've done now is basically made this an annual training. I think we've done it 4 years in a row in May. And now we do it as an annual training where we do spill response measures, spill volume calculations, bypass setup, cleanup, documentation, all the things that check the boxes that we need to check when we're talking about our SSMP or our WDR regulations or any of the regulations that we have to follow with the state. Training for spill response is something now that is mandated. It's part of that. It's not clearly spelled out what it is. The, you know, a tabletop exercise may suffice, but we feel like if we're doing this, we're definitely checking that box. Also, everybody that's part of our member agency is getting the same consistent training. And that's the big thing, is everyone who's going to respond to assist on a spill has the same training as the person next to them, and everybody is on the same page and knows what to do if there is an issue or an emergency. So again, some of that stuff we do, spill response containment cleanups. We go through filling out the forms on if we do a spill. We do a mock spill usually where we set up a manhole, run water to it, and then we have selected crews respond to the spill, pull up on it with their truck, set up like it would be a normal spill. A lot of the guys are kind of like, hey, what are we really doing here? I mean, it's obviously not a spill, but it's more about the muscle memory aspect. The more you do something, the more it's going to become natural. And again, if you get a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, you get woken up and you got to show up somewhere, it's pitch black. Like, what are you going to do? Well, if you've kind of ran through this a few times before, it's a little bit easier to go through those motions, be prepared, get everything set up. And then obviously documentation is one of the big things that we really, really, really push on these guys. Photographs, times, take all the documentation you can during these practice exercises. Because during a live event, that's one of the most important things. You're going to be having to sift through all this stuff the next day when the dust settles and you're having to do these reports. So the better documentation you have when the event's happening live, the better prepared you'll be to submit the reports after the event. Here's another video from, 3 years ago. This was at the City of Ontario Yard. So they have a pretty cool setup over there where they have a manhole that they have plumbed. There it goes. That they're able to kind of flood and simulate an SSO. So we did that, ran a couple drills where we split up the crews, have them show up, do containment, set up on the manhole, pretend that they're going to jet it, clear the blockage, and then go through the steps of finishing that cleanup and then doing the documentation and filling out all the paperwork like you would in a real spill scenario. There's plenty of different ways to do it. Ontario has that manhole set up. We've taken like an old composite manhole that we had and plumbed it with water just to be able to simulate that same issue. You can do a 5 gallon bucket and pour it on the ground. Like, it doesn't have to be elaborate, but the idea is more of just going through the motions and doing that documentation.
So looking at, as Ed was saying, when you see that video, you see multiple trucks, you see a lot of the teams working together. We typically do not put same crews together. Like, IUA crew is not gonna be just by itself. City of Ontario crews isn't gonna be on their own running the drills. We actually take one from each different agency and put them together as one group to where they have to practice together. Because when it's in an emergency situation, that's typically how things go. So, and this gives them a very clear understanding of who they're working with. They know they're getting the same training, and that way they are comfortable when they're out there in an emergency situation. They don't have to be concerned about, does he know what he's doing? No, I know he knows what he's doing. He got the same training that I did. So looking at the State Water Sanitary Sewer Systems General Order, so the WDR, it doesn't explicitly call it out like we said earlier, but it does, and we put some specifications in here so you can actually find it in the WDR. It is part of your compliance for the sewer emergency response plan in the WDR. It's on attachment D6. So this will help you because you want to have a network. You want to have additional resources. That's what the state is wanting to see. It's not just what you currently have within your own agency. It's what additional resources do you have available to you within the region. So it also helps with your sewer system management plan. Every agency has to have this if you have over 1 mile of pipe. So it's helping with that backup equipment, your inventory that's on attachment D4.4. It also supports in the following areas. So these are all under specifications under that attachment D. So feel free if you guys have questions on this additional, we're totally willing to help with that. So looking at some of the spill emergency events, this one is very close to my heart because this is the one that I was at. It was my first one. So this one was the first time that when I had taken over collections that we had to respond to. It was a Sunday, July 19th, 2020. It was 90 degrees. And we got a call from the police department that it was in City Chino Hills, that there was a spill, and it was in an apartment complex. So we made some phone calls. It was a lot larger than we had anticipated. So we had about 5 different agencies with their combo trucks, plus we had a contractor on site with a tanker unit to just make sure we get everything done. And when it's a hot day like this, you want to have additional resources because you don't want to tire out your team. And so this was pretty important. And it ended up being, we had an issue with some rags and some grease within this siphon line. I'll let Ed go on some more.
Yeah, so we got a couple other examples here that we'll touch on. This is February 2018. This is one of our force mains. We have two redundant force mains running through the city of Ontario, and they're both used actively simultaneously to support the capacity of the lift station. Well, a contractor was installing a storm drain, and as you can see, they struck it. It's always a contractor. They know how to find everything, right? So this is obviously a big event, and being a pressurized line, large volume spill. Luckily, we were able to respond quickly with support from our mutual aid agencies and keep this contained to the excavation and never flooded out. It took about 24 hours to finally discover which line it was, isolate it, drain it, empty this void, and then be able to do the repair. So that being said, there's another aspect of the mutual aid is how long can you get your crews on site? How long can you keep them going? We started at 6 a.m. that day. We got this call about 3 p.m. and running on to the next morning. At some point, safety becomes an issue, right? So having the ability to possibly stagger shifts or relieve each other is definitely another benefit of our program. And that's what we were able to do here. We were we kept all the agencies that were involved updated. They knew what was going on. City of Ontario was able to have staff go home and then come late that night to relieve us and finish up the job in the morning. So again, just another huge aspect of that is just time. I mean, at some point you can't work continuously for hours and hours without running into possible safety issues. This is a more recent one, and this is a fun thing we've been seeing out there, is the directional drilling. As you could see, they just popped right through this lateral to this community. And it took about 6 months from what I heard before they noticed it backing up and then kind of saw some leaching through the ground. So it took a while to discover it. And then obviously it took a while to discover what the actual problem was. But another instance of where mutual aid was huge. This was CVWD, Cucamonga Valley. Sean gave us a call. It was like a Thursday afternoon. He had staff on vacation. He had a truck down. He was limited on guys. We were like, all right, let's go. We'll come out and help you out. So a couple of my operators there in the middle, Eddie and Adolfo, they were with them. They were able to, you know, go talk to the residents and help notify them what was going on, track where this possible blockage was, and then ultimately discover it and then get the repair done, you know, in the middle of the night, but get water restored back to that community by the next morning. So that was another instance of where the quick response was able to really, really streamline the process. This is one of our most recent issues that we've had in the mutual program and probably one of our largest responses. So we have a couple of plants, as we mentioned, but only two of those actually handle solids. So the other plants need to send that sludge to that plant to be processed. They have a couple of sludge lines, and one of those sludge lines ruptured. So this was February 28th. This is a one lane in each direction street, kind of in a rural area. Dark, not well lit. Some point in the middle of the night, this line blew. We didn't get the call till about 4 a.m. because people were driving through it. And then like, wait, what is that? That's not a puddle of rainwater. Sure enough, it was sludge. So we started calling people at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, normally if I'm calling somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't necessarily expect a quick response, but due to our mutual aid program and the communication relationships we have, every agency I called answered or called me back within about 15 minutes. And was happy to send staff. So in total, we had, I think, 8 or 9 combo trucks, 3 large loaders, 3 water trucks, and one of those was even a contractor that we were able to get out. Again, this is where the volume of sludge, the amount of sludge, and then the footprint of the sludge, if this was just IUA staff, would have taken forever. In total, we had probably 50 to 60 people, mutual aid and IUA staff on site doing this cleanup. And we were able to restore the road to use by, I think, about 3 p.m. So, again, that quick turnaround to protect the community and get the flow back of traffic going was huge. One of the biggest aspects of this, too, was the ability to shut down the road. We don't have that power, that ability, but City of Chino, where this was located, was happy to do that. They sent PD out. They brought out message boards. They were able to set up a detour for us and actually shut the street down so we could do this cleanup. So huge, huge time savings there on that end. Here's a couple more photos of that. Again, this was just a mess, absolute mess. So a terrible day here in collections, But having the help of the mutual aid program definitely made it a lot better, a lot more manageable for us. And from this, we had an idea of a way to kind of literally show a token of appreciation for everybody who responded. So we created these challenge coins. The ones on the left, the bronze ones, were from 2024. We have these new black ones for 2025. But literal, like I said, a token of appreciation. If you show up in response to assist another agency, you get one of these challenge coins. The idea is, you know, maybe in 20 years, some guy's got a stack of them on his desk, and you're like, hey, what are those for? He's going to have a story for each one of them. It's not a good day, but we can do what we can to, you know, bring it to light and, you know, acknowledge the efforts of the people that are part of our mutual aid program. Yeah, so with that, any questions, any comments? Again, Lucia mentioned we're happy to share any of this with anybody. We've been doing this presentation across the state at different conferences. There's agencies and areas out there throughout the state that are looking into doing similar things like this. And, you know, we're really a big proponent of it because it's been a huge success for us. So if anybody's interested, if you have any ideas or you want to help getting it started, go ahead and reach out to us. We're happy to provide any information.
Go ahead, Darren.
I really appreciate you guys coming around. This is a presentation I saw a number of months ago that I thought would be really great to share with this organization. I know it's got a sewer focus, but the takeaway is that mutual aid and the benefit of it, right? Because it works across the board. Another question I had is I saw a little bit of it up there with regards to first responders. Have you ever applied this mutual aid practice to any of your EOC or any of your other, you know, emergency preparedness training? Because you guys do a lot of that down there as well.
We do. And so where right now we're focusing the EOC more internally on a lot more tabletop. And so one of my objectives for this coming fiscal year is to do a simulation outside of a tabletop with the EOC and then kind of work it to where we can incorporate it with our mutual aid team. We haven't gotten there yet. But we're moving towards that direction with our safety team.
And then can you talk a little bit about the fact within your mutual aid agreement, there are costs associated with the use of staff
Yes.
or equipment. But how often are you guys actually billing one another for those services?
That is a great question and a question that comes up every time we do this presentation. So in our mutual aid agreement, which we're very happy to share with everyone, it does dictate in there about the costs and what's associated. So if in the event an agency needs to get covered for anything, it's in there. But I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, it doesn't happen. The only time it does happen is typically if the contractor has actually caused the spill and we want to have them pay back all the costs associated with the issue that they caused, right? So, and even that is hard for me to, and I'll give you an example. City of Chino, I had reached out to them. I said, hey, I need you to send me an invoice. And he's like, for what? And I go, for the mutual aid response. And, you know, he was like, are you really? And I said, it's going to cost me more to create it than it is for me to give it to you. And I said, I just need it so we can charge the contractor back because we got to take care of your time too. So he pulled it together. He sent it to me and I looked at it and I said, this isn't enough. This doesn't cover your staff time. This only covers the material, like your equipment. And so I just said, look, I gave him the hours that I did for our team, how many guys we had. I told him, you had this many guys, just give me what your guys' rate is. So we put it together that way. It's always really hard to go back, right? And it always takes time and effort to put those invoices together. It's a cost. So when we're doing this mutual aid program and we're supporting each other, it's us doing it for the public health, for the public benefit. And if City of Ontario is going to have an emergency, they're going to have to deal with it anyways. If it ends up being us, we're going to have to get involved, especially if it's a sewer. So it's a mutual benefited agreement, and we typically do not charge each other. Sometimes it just doesn't seem right. I will say there's times where certain agencies are larger and can handle more costs than others, right? And there's some agencies that maybe only have 2 guys on their collection crew, and their equipment isn't always running. And when they have a spill in their area, they need more help from the bigger group guys than they typically want to. We're not going to charge them every time we come out to help them out. We've noticed that it's really just been a group effort. Our our management has been very, our senior leadership has been very supportive of that. It does come up when there's leadership change in regards to, hey, how come we don't charge for this, or how come we're not charging for your time? Because I will tell you, out of for IUA, we handle a lot of the brunt of it when it comes to the training, when it comes to the coordination. When we hire consultants, we take it on our dollar. But it's part of our program, because I'm going to be hiring those people anyways to do it for my team. I want it to be cost effective and hit more people than just my seven. Because to me, as a region, as a state, we're still going to have, our public is still going to have to pay those tax dollars anyways. So let me make sure we're not double paying or triple paying in different areas. So hopefully that answers that.
You answered it, and even more exactly where I wanted you to go, because again, I think this group is a great example of some really small agencies and some larger agencies. And what you talked about today was, doesn't matter where you are on that spectrum, at some point in time, you're going to need help. And the ability to go to a mutual aid agreement and have those contacts and know the fact, I need a loader. Wait, I know Cody's got a loader. Let me give him a call real quick, right? We're all in this industry together, and it is a small group. And the more we can work together on this, the better off we'll all be able to operate our systems.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I always try to remember, and I know others do, is we're all dealing with the same political and budget and staff constraints. So let's try and share the pain a little bit and support each other as best we can. And it's a great way for our staffs to connect. And I see them as a family and a network that they need to really, because they're with these people all the time. And if they can reach out to another agency that's in the same industry dealing with similar problems at their agency like theirs, and they can figure out a way to work together, it's only going to benefit the region as a whole, not just that particular agency. You really need to look at it as more holistically at the whole group instead of just one particular area. Because when you look at it, you know, when the pipeline's going across the different streets, it doesn't stop because of a certain city boundary. It continues on. So, and same thing when you're having staff drive. When people are driving throughout the region, they don't stop just because within the city boundaries. They're continuing on. So it's a shared benefit.
Yeah, you know, on the large scale that you showed on the assistance for one another, you know, it drills all the way down even to sometimes the simplest things, right? I mean, we're all seeing logistics issues today with regards to, oh, my God, I need this piece of, you know, whatever piece of tool or equipment or, you know, some piece of material, and I'm like, oh, my God, lead time is how long, right? Having the connections with these other agencies is super beneficial, right? I don't know anybody today that has something sitting in a warehouse that's like, okay, well, you need it today? Yeah, just replace it. We'd all definitely reach out and do that. So it's always, again, thank you again for sharing all that.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, Darren. On the cost for labor and equipment, does each agency have their own identified, or do they have agreed upon rates for certain operators and pieces of equipment?
We actually have no rates listed. In the agreement, there's no specific rates listed because this agreement was put together 20 years ago. So the only time the agreement changes is typically when we're adding someone new, and then we have to go send it back out for signature. But we don't have agreed rates. A lot of our agencies' labor rates and everything, it's all posted online anyways through the California website. So we don't really question it when it does come up.
Okay, thank you. And selfishly, I saw a City of Redlands hat on one of these individuals out here. So my question there is there the opportunity to get involved in these exercises, or at least to come shadow and watch?
So we always invite, I feel so weird. Here.
You can talk that way. It's okay. Just fine.
Okay. So what we do, the reason why sometimes we get a lot of agencies participating, when we have those agencies that are outside our service area, we are fine with them coming, but we don't want their whole crew coming. We'll usually just say, hey, why don't you bring like you as the supervisor or the lead or your manager, so they can kind of see what we're doing and participate that way. And it's more of like they're just kind of watching and learning instead of really participating. They'll do the tabletop exercises and that part of the training. But when it comes to the hands-on simulation, we usually save that for those that are within the region. But like we've had City of San Bernardino, we've had Elsinore, we've had City of Redlands came, and then we've also had LA County San. LA County San recently just came out to watch us, and they had three guys come out, and it was it was their management team to kind of see how we put these events on together.
Yeah, I really liked your contact and equipment list. I thought that was really good, and this is something we're looking to do on both the, you know, we were looking on the water side, but now, yeah, this just expands it. So having a sewer collection system as well. So this is great. Anything online, Teresa? Sorry.
Not at this time.
Okay. Other questions, comments? I see a hand up. Hold on. We're going to get you a microphone here so everybody can hear.
The mutual aid contacts and resources list that you included with your handout, is that available online?
No. So we have that on there, really small, because we'll share like the format and how we set it up. But all those contacts and stuff, that's for our region, because it's emergency phone numbers that we use within our region. So we try to be a little within our region of all our emergency contacts.
Actually, we're currently working on developing kind of more of a toolkit, like outline that we'll be able to share with agencies when we're doing these presentations and stuff. So hopefully in the next few months, we'll have something. So if you do gain traction with something like this, let us know. And yeah, we may be able to provide at least the template of it and be like, hey, this is what we include in ours. If you want to ask these questions and try to get that information from your area.
Yeah, thanks. It looks like it come in handy in an emergency for sure.
So. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Any other questions or comments? Well, seeing none, we thank you so much for making the trek up the hill, Lucia and Ed, and we appreciate it. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be reaching out. All right, we'll move on to item 7, and it's a presentation from the town of Apple Valley regarding their detention basin project, and we have Richard Pedersen here from the town.
Thank you for that introduction. My name is Richard Pedersen. I'm the town engineer for the town of Apple Valley, and I want to thank Kenneth and Liz and Charlene for making me feel at home. They all came from our town. Staff. And I've known Tony Winkle for several years now. He's got a great voice. Someday I want to be like you, Tony. So let's get started. I first want to mention that the town's motto underneath the town of Apple Valley, if you go to our council chambers, it says a better way of life. And I was sitting there looking at the mission statement, and it says a collaboratively managed groundwater basins. And this is where our missions kind of come together, because I'm here because I want to make the town a better way of life. And it's interesting because we'd like to talk about a groundwater recharge basin that I think is clearly in your mission statement. So how did we get here? About 2012, a huge storm came through the town and flooded pretty much that north-south area. Homes in that area were flooded. It was around Christmas time. I remember seeing photos of people's homes that had about a foot of water touching the bottom of their Christmas trees, and their gifts were floating on top of this flood. I was out there watching people trying to sandbag and push the water from coming into their property. It was quite a traumatic experience for us, one of the biggest storms that we've experienced. And so if you look at the very south end where this water sort of originates from, it happens to be on our master plan of drainage. So when we incorporated, the flood control district gave us a master plan of drainage to use, and it's a series of concrete channels that cost $500 million in 1999, and that means about $4 billion today. So we're not really building any concrete channels to do our flood control. What we are is a town of retention basins. Every tract map that gets approved, we require that they put in a retention basin to offset their increased runoff. And we use a lot of dry wells that help drain these retention basins. So going back to this plan, there's a huge retention basin that's kind of slated to go right there to help offset the flooding that goes north into Apple Valley. I approached Flood Control District because we believed it was a regional facility that they should put it on their list. And they did. They a couple years ago, they said, we're going to do the what they call it the Juniper Basin. And so they've been talking about it every year for a few years. And this is the approximate location of this water recharge, spreading underground water recharge basin. And what they want to do is create a series of, it's kind of a stepping type of situation where the water fills up the first level, then it spills over to the second, and the water goes into the ground. And that's what they're proposing to do. When we asked them to put this in as a retention, as strictly a flood control facility, they said, well, we can't just build a retention basin. We have to create, build a channel and take it somewhere. And they were looking at taking it to the Mojave River. They were looking, this actually goes to the dry lake. And just as recently as this spring, they said, well, we'll start first building the channel from the dry lake and come upstream about 5 miles. And I said, that's silly. So they said, well, we can't build a basin without flood controlling the water that leaves the basin. And so I kept pushing, and they said, well, then let's do something else. Let's do we can do a groundwater recharge basin that basically takes a lot of the peak flow off of a most small storms and can flatten out a large storm and recharge the groundwater. And I like your mission statement. So if we can work together, we could build something that the Flood Control District can lead as the technical advisory person, us pushing it for a flood control safety and a better way of life for Apple Valley. And then the Mojave Water Agency would also meet their mission. Okay, so enhance regional water sustainability in the high desert. So this part actually, I'm representing the town and also flood control. And so flood control gave me this portion of their presentation. Mine has a lot of pretty pictures. Theirs doesn't, so please consider the source. Aligns with the county Mojave Water Agency's long-term infrastructure goals, promotes active, adaptive infrastructure. Regional water sustainability captures stormwater from intense flooding, allows infiltration, helps restore the balance of draft groundwater basins. This is the pitch for the Mojave Water Agency to jump on board as a partner. Addresses flood risk, integrates smart hydrology, and design dual purpose. And it's interesting, if this thing will cost a lot of money to construct, and so when we unify as the Flood Control District, the Town of Apple Valley, the Mojave Water Agency to fill out grant applications, they just love the cooperation that the collaboration, I should say. Groundwater sustainability. Again, this basin will hold up to 250 acre feet. So I want you to remember that number because it'll be a pop quiz at the end of the presentation. Splash pads, which I believe is the stepping down approach to reduce velocity. It'll spread it out. It won't, we don't deal with standard floods. We deal with flash floods. And flash floods means they come hard and they come fast and then they're done within a couple hours. So this retention basin / groundwater recharge basin will sort of attenuate the peak is what we call that. Reduces groundwater overpumping, decreases dependency upon imported water. These are all the pluses that we would like to remind everybody. For flood mitigation benefits, this is what I was looking for. It'll detain the peak storm floors, storm flows, and reduce downstream erosion and sediment. It's funny because we live in the high desert and we're basically in a constant state of erosion. Every time it rains, you'll see a big pile of sand in some corner where the water drops its sedimentation. And these retention basins help accumulate that and keep it off of our streets. Okay. Again, can't emphasize enough where San Bernardino County Flood Control District would be permitting this process, provide technical assistance. And I talked to Michael Pham at the Flood Control District about maintenance. I said, well, if you guys own it and are permitting it, then you guys would have to maintain it. And he said, well, yes, but if there's some, we haven't got to that point yet. We need to talk about the ongoing maintenance. I don't know how much maintenance is involved, but he was saying that if it becomes sort of a recreation area where the town builds bike paths or something like that, that we could each take some responsibility for maintenance. App Valley Local Planning and Engagement, that's where I come in. I basically push these folks to get us a project that can actually do some good for our community. And then the Mojave Water Agency mission and goals right there. Okay, let's not go too fast. Small surface funding strategy. Okay, so there's a grant opportunity that was pointed out to me. So it starts at the federal level at the top, small surface water and groundwater storage grant. It's the Land Bureau. I'll get into that next slide. But then there's state grants out there. There's flood control district funds, which they can't pay for everything. This thing is roughly going to be, you know, $30 million. But we have a strategy for that. Then the local partner agency resources. Okay, so they gave me another slideshow, which I've kind of reduced into two slides. So I know how stuff this can be boring, so I want to keep it educational and concise. So this is one that we're looking at. The Bureau of Reclamation is a federal grant. There's lots of different ways to get money, and this is one of them. Apparently, there's $40 million left. Six projects in California and Utah have been funded with $55 million in total awards, and there's $40 million left. So we think this is a good application that we should all fill out and submit with that community, you know, togetherness, you know. Anyway, the unity that we are trying to foster at this point. The infrastructure, it was enacted in 2021, provided $100 million. Like I said, there's 55 that's been spent and 40 that's left over. A water storage capacity in order to apply for this grant, you have to have a basin that stores at not less than 200 acres. So here's the pop quiz. How big is our, anybody? Tony. Yes, you get a star on your head. I'll hand that out at the end of the meeting. So, yes, 250 acre feet, and that's what we have. So our basin fits the criteria, and there's money out there. We just have to fill out the grants. Okay, improves water. Again, more slides from the flood control district, reduces storm damage, improves water reliability, supports habitat and recreation. And that's where I was thinking, well, what can you do with it? A basin, a big hole in the ground that doesn't have any water in it until it rains once or twice a year. Well, you know, we could create bike paths like we did along the Mojave River a few years ago. Okay. Education and trail access. Okay. Native vegetation. There's all kinds of nice things that we can include in this application and perhaps get other funding in other locations. Invite, enhance, deliver. Okay, so that's it. I wanted to read so what happened on Tuesday night at the council meeting? I was at the council meeting in Apple Valley, and one of our Paul Cook's employees, staff member, announced that he gets up and basically gives this presentation about how wonderful the Juniper Basin is, and I'm all of a sudden starting to pay attention, and he's like, it's going to do all these wonderful things, and our office has gotten very involved, and we've actually secured $9 million. And so I'm like, I didn't hear about that. So I called up Flood Control District and they didn't hear about that, and so they were like running around all day yesterday trying to figure out what this $9 million is. And I said, Mike, you need to send me an email. He says, as we discussed on the phone, the testing Juniper Project has received a $9 million award through the 2024 Water Resources Development Act. The San Bernardino County Flood Control District will coordinate with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to initiate project planning discussions, confirm this project scope and schedule as part of the process. SBC San Bernardino County Flood Control District will draft and submit the annual letter of intent to the United States Corps of Engineers, indicating the district's commitment to proceed and meet local sponsor requirements. After approval, the county flood control district will then work with the Flood Control Corps of Engineers to finalize and execute a project partnership agreement, which outlines the roles, responsibilities, and cost-sharing responsibilities. The Flood Control District will provide its required cost share, typically 50% for the feasibility study and 25% to 35% for design and construction. So we've already got, again, this came out before I submitted this application or this presentation to the agency here, and it's right off the press. This was yesterday afternoon at 4:04 p.m. And so the Flood Control District's already committing 50% to this grant of $9 million. It's an award, and you can't get it all. They're not going to cut us a check for $9 million. How they work is you have to tell them what you're going to do this year, and then you get reimbursed, and that's how it works. But it's great. It's great. I was hoping that you would understand how important this project is. It's already hit the federal government, and now we're going to get $9 million allocated with the partnership between Flood Control District and the Corps of Engineers to do the feasibility study, at least, and also design and construction, depending on the type of the project. Once the PPA is in place, the Flood Control District will support the Flood Control District or the Corps of Engineers in leading the project delivery, including studies, environmental review, design, and construction, ensuring compliance with federal acquisition regulations. And finally, the Flood Control District will monitor the project progress, coordinate and with stakeholders, and provide regular updates to the partner agencies and the public to ensure transparency. So by no means is this $9 million the end chapter. We're not done because we've got $9 million. They indicated that the channel would probably cost $20 million, or the basin will cost actually $20 million, and this $9 million will get us right up to that construction, and that we still need to apply for grants to do this. The one I explained has the $40 million available, and Flood Control District can't apply for the grant. Apple Valley can't apply for the grant because it's a water agency type of a grant. So we want to, so what this really does is it shows that we've already got money in this project, which puts it on the radar. And so what we're asking as the town engineer, what I'm asking the agency to do is to partner with us and the Flood Control District and now the Corps of Engineers to push it to the next level, which is securing an additional $20 million from the Land Bureau Management grant that was that act that I talked about earlier for an additional $20 million. And that's the end of my presentation. I appreciate everyone here for sharing the good news that I just received yesterday, and also to help us kind of come unified together on this project, because I really believe it's going to save a lot of flooding downstream and recharge the water basin. Any question?
Not so much. Can you hear me? Not so much a question, more of a statement. Couple things. I am not a water master expert, and so I'm looking at our water master staff to please correct me if I misspeak. So the Mojave Basin area judgment does not allow us to do stormwater capture for recharge to the Mojave River. But since this does not drain to the Mojave River, I do believe that this would not fall under that restriction. Maybe we need to wait for Jeff to get back because he's on vacation. But so I think
I can wait.
So my point is, catching local sources of runoff is a great way to have local supply of water. So that's a plus in my book, with that one caveat. But again, I don't think it falls under that restriction. Also, just from my history as, you know, working as a hydrogeologist at Mojave Water Agency and seeing other grant opportunities over the years, this looks like a very great opportunity for some collaboration and for grant opportunities. And also, as far as local water supply, anything that makes it to a dry lake bed is gone. Dry lake beds are composed of clay and silt, which does not like to transmit water, so it's an evaporation pan. So if we can catch water that's destined for a dry lake bed and actually allow it to sink into the ground where there's more favorable percolation conditions, that's just bonus water supply to our region.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate that support and your comments.
Other questions? We have one over here on the right.
Yes. Is it $20 million total and you're $9 million, or do you need $29
million? I need 20. Again, it's too early to say what the real number is. And Michael Pham, I said, $9 million is not going to get us there. He goes, well, and I asked him for a cost estimate before, and he refused to tell me. But then when we got this $9 million, he says, we probably need about $20 million more. So it'd be $29 million. To answer your short question with a really long answer, it's $29 million.
Thank you.
But the town doesn't have that much money, and neither does the agency. Well, you might, but I don't suppose you would.
You'd be surprised. Other questions? So no preliminary design, just some conceptual ideas and drawings is what they have so far?
Yes. What you saw on the screen is what they sent me. I wanted more, but this is where we are at the time, is those conceptual stepping down and the location. I think the location is okay, but on our master plan, there's one piece of property I've been looking at for a long time, and it is, you know, 200 acres, I believe, and it's huge, and it's right south of the railroad tracks. And so if we bought that land, we could actually do more than what we're showing initially. But these are real preliminary concepts at this point.
And I'm probably not going to pass the pop quiz, but you showed an area on there of where it was going to be. How big is that area you showed? Do you have any idea?
I don't. If it's a few feet deep and we're going to retain 250 acre feet, you know, it could be 100 acres or less what they're showing.
Okay.
This is where I have my, you know, my concerns, the location, what it looks like. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
See, right next to this yellow box, there's this property that goes all the way from one property to the next, one street to the next. And I know about that because somebody came in with a tentative track map about 15 years ago. And so I know that it's one piece of land. And they're kind of, for some reason, they're putting it over a bunch of property owners, which I don't think is, you know, it's easier to deal with one property owner than there is a dozen, what it appears to be right now. So my recommendation is to go to the east a little bit and make it kind of rectangular and maybe not go as deep. But again, preliminary, just, you know, we're all just talking right now, except for that $9 million, which really gets us on the radar.
Jeff Gastra.
So that flood in was 2012, and it must have been December because Christmas trees were up. Was that would you think that's a 50-year flood, a 100-year flood? Or who? Maybe Tony knows more about that than I do. I need to look it up.
Yeah, Tony, could you get that to us real fast? In my experience, it was probably the biggest flood that I've seen, and I've started working for the town of Apple Valley in 1990, so that would be, 35 years? And it kind of followed that pathway. You can see there's a tract right in the middle of that long, skinny area. There's a tract that has a bunch of cul-de-sacs. I don't know if you can see there. And all those cul-de-sacs are filled with water. When we developed that tract, we knew that this was going to flood, so we put a flood zone in everybody's front yard in those tracks, in that tract. And I remember the water going up those cul-de-sacs. and people couldn't get out for like 24 hours. It was kind of scary. So there's some retention basins in that tract, which is really, it's like a mile long and a quarter mile wide. And every one of those cul-de-sacs had water. And that was the indication of a 100-year flood. So if you got up into those cul-de-sacs, that was a 100-year flood. And they did get up into those cul-de-sacs. So it was a significant storm event.
Any other questions? Nobody online either?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, that's exciting news, actually. So, yeah, it's surely fits within the mission of the agency. Yeah.
Well, thank you for hosting this presentation. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Richard. We appreciate it. Okay, we'll move on to item 8, updates, announcements, and comments. Number one is a Water Master update. It's a standing item. That is a report only that you can find in the agenda. And I think it pretty much refers to just what the ramp down is for the 25-26 FPA recommendation. Do I have that right, Teresa? Yes, okay. But we do have an update from Charlene and Geron on public information update on upcoming events.
We do have a comment from Watermaster, Marissa.
I'm sorry.
I'm Marissa Arcia from Watermaster staff. I just wanted to add that since Jeff wrote that update that's in the memo, the court order is on our website and is available to read. So that's there at this point. That's all.
And that is what they held with, I believe, right? Baja State at 19.5?
Baja State at 19.5. The public safe yield did get changed, though, to 12,189, which is different than what we recommended. That's okay. The only change.
Thank you. Okay, Charlene, you're next.
All right.
I didn't see you over there.
Sneaky. All right, I think we're up on screen and we're good to go. Well, good morning. It's been a little less than a year since I've gotten to present at this committee meeting. So want to bring you up to speed on many of the things that we've been doing for the last few months in the Public Information Office. And to do that, I will introduce the team. I will briefly explain the strategic plan that guides our work. We'll talk through some of the process we use to ensure our work is aligned with the agency's mission, vision, and values. I'm going to tell you about some of the events and activities and marketing we've done this past year. And then, of course, I will give you a glimpse of things to come. So the Public Information Office is a team of 3.5. Besides myself, our department has 2 public information specialists, Kenny Sousa and Liz Fratt. You've probably seen their body of work more than you've seen mine. Kenny is the magic behind our growing social media presence, our website guru, and more, and he is right there in the back row. Give him a wave. And then we have Liz Fratt, and she coordinates all of our events and activities, juggling so many moving parts, and manages our strategic partnership program, which is a big job in itself. And I honestly don't know how I got a lot of that done for the year I was here without them. So very grateful to have them on the team. And then finally, even though he's not a direct report to me, we have Isaac, Administrative Assistant Isaac Torres, to help us out occasionally. You will see his friendly face up at the reception desk up here. And then he's also partially assigned to do tasks for us. So that's been a welcome addition. So last year, we completed the agency's very first communication and outreach strategic plan, and that ensures that our work aligns with the agency's mission, vision, and values. And it also ensures that we're doing everything in a purposeful manner, and we are not wasting public funds or time. And the methodology behind this is based on a principle I call ACEs in Their Places, which is an acronym. ACEs is an acronym for keeping our audience in mind to deliver the agency's core messages using effective tools, tactics, and deliverables to meet purposeful strategic communication goals and objectives. Our work is based on four main pillars, and those are marketing, public outreach, and engagement, conservation education, and then every agency should have a crisis communications plan. So the presentation we saw earlier fit right in. I was clued into that because that's a lot of what we do in our department too, is that communications. So here's some of the things that we've done in the last few months. So in traditional public information office style, we publish press releases on everything from our upcoming events, groundbreakings, et cetera, to announcing awards or grant funds that we've received. We have a very robust social media presence that any of you who are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, should really be following us. Just search for @MojaveWater and you'll see us there. I think it's important to note that we didn't even have an Instagram account 3 years ago, and Kenny started that from zero, and it has grown exponentially. So thank you, Kenny, for that. You'll see lots of activity on both of our accounts. We leverage tools from partners like Aqua to schedule posts, and we spread awareness about conservation and about our agency in general on those channels. A good example of this is the Aqua approved toolkit and graphics, and we did use that to promote our Water Awareness Month, and that happens every May. And there's a few more examples. You'll see department features, behind the scenes look at what we do, like water resources, installing a new monitoring well out in Hellendale. So some people may think, well, how interesting can working in water be? It can be very, very interesting, and staff is really, really good at bringing that to life. So you'll see department features, behind the scenes look. Let's see. So here's some more examples of what you'll see on social media. We feature our youth outreach programs like our Water Summit. We publicize classes and professional development opportunities offered by partners like Cal Rural Water Association. I think we have somebody here today from there. Yep, right there. And then we post conservation tips and things like our Plant of the Month. We've been really busy since the last time I presented, so here are a few recent past events. Last month, we celebrated the agency's 65th anniversary with a very small ceremony, keeping budget and time in mind. We dedicated a brand new bench, right out these doors in our conservation demonstration garden, and really invite you to stop by, take a moment, rest your feet on the bench, and you can be surrounded by our beautiful desert flora, fauna, plants that we encourage people to do instead of planting big green lawns. Let's see. A week after that, just the very next week, we broke ground on our traveling screen project out in Phelan. It was the first groundbreaking that we'd had since I've been at the agency, and it was just really neat to see this project come to fruition that we've been hearing about planning for, and so it was a really good event. Hope some of you made it there. As a matter of fact, I know some of you made it there, so thank you for coming. And then, just last Friday, we sponsored the Southern California Water Coalition's Building Industry Association's Water Conference. Long title. Mojave Water Agency was actually one of the founding agencies to put this on 19 years ago, so we're very proud to continue partnering with them. We do sit on the planning committee and participate in that with a sponsorship every year. We host an information booth to give our agency some visibility there, and this year we even helped with setup and staffing the registration table. Now, here's a good look at our Family Fun Night. We host every summer as part of our Wonders of Water series, and I would be remiss if I did not give credit where credit is due for this incredible event. Liz, who is right there in the other side of the room in the back row, give him a wave. She was the mastermind behind this, from concept to decorations to organizing all the activities and coordinating registrations. If you couldn't tell from the pictures, she incorporated a Lego theme. Now, of course, we didn't use Lego in the marketing because we didn't want to, you know, break any brand trade agreements. But it was a Lego theme, and we partnered with the Institute for Watershed Resiliency at Cal State San Bernardino to teach infrastructure and conservation lessons to families who attended. It was a lot of fun, and we are also grateful for other staff members outside of our immediate department who helped pull this off, which we do often. I feel very, very fortunate that our department is very collaborative. It's one of the things I love most about this agency. And from finance to water resources to operations, I don't think there's a single department that we don't work with in some form or fashion to bring value to our service area. So really, really appreciate that. A few more education and outreach opportunities we've participated in include, we had a presence at National Night Out. This year we participated in the Apple Valley one. This is an event held nationwide, and we may participate in other cities in the future, but this year we did Apple Valley. We participate in numerous career fairs at every age level, and we do this for a number of reasons. And when I say every age level, even elementary school, all the way on up through college, we don't think that you can start talking about opportunities in water or infrastructure in general soon enough, and creating those connections so that they know they have a pathway in water. And so that we do several of these a year, and it's a highlight getting to, again, we collaborate with other departments, and everybody loves going to these, and I want to say geeking out about what they do for water. And it's really cool. You can see their passion for it when they talk to the students. Let's see. We host a lot of online conservation presentations. We do in-person Waters of Wonder workshops and a lot more. We'd be here all day if I listed every single thing we participate in to positively promote the agency. So I'm going to switch gears here and share a few things that we've got coming up. So we have a roadshow coming up. Seats are filling up fast. This used to be called our mini tour. We rebranded this a couple of years ago. It's the MWA Roadshow, and it's going to be held September 10th. It's free. We meet here at the agency headquarters, and we do a presentation. I believe that Tony Winkle will be one of our presenters this year for this particular roadshow. He will share his knowledge, and we'll have a continental breakfast. Then we're going to board a tour bus, and it's going to take us to our operations facility, and everybody will get a behind-the-scenes look at some of those systems there. Then we're going to travel up to the Summit Valley Overlook. That's up by Silverwood Lake, and you're going to be able to see where the water is stored and where it comes down through Silverwood Dam and eventually makes its way down to the Mojave River. We conclude with lunch at the agency and are available for any lingering questions that participants may have. And sign up because the seats are filling up fast. I think we are more than halfway. Are we more than halfway full, Liz? We have 7 spaces left. So if you want in on this tour, sign up now. You can find the link on our website. All right. So our next virtual conservation class is going to be held on Thursday, October 2nd from 6 to 7 p.m. This is also free, and it's going to teach you how to garden safely, identifying physical and sensory limitations and offering tips to work around them. So we call this our ADA-friendly gardening, and encourage you to sign up for that as well. You can take it from the comfort of your own couch. And we also have one coming up on winterizing to save water. There's a lot of, you know, even if we don't have a lot of rain, it can get very, very cold here. And if you're not prepared for it, there could be leaks and you waste water in the winter. So this class will teach you how to prepare and hopefully avoid those leaks. All right. And next week, we are launching our youth scholarship competitions. We have an annual high school essay contest, and then our problem solvers competition for both middle school and high schools. And that's a team competition. I am going to put in a shameless plug right now for sponsorships. Each of these competitions offers scholarships for between $1,000 and $3,000 to either individual students for their essays or to schools who have teams for the problem solvers contest. Now, pre-pandemic and before my time, we had people, businesses, agencies support these efforts to cover these scholarships. So we need your help. Spread the word. Any sponsorships help, $500, $2,500, et cetera, so we can fully fund and maybe even increase a little bit the amount of support that we give our students. And we've seen some amazing things happen even from our essay contest. A couple of years ago, we had, a few years ago, I should say, we had a finalist. He didn't even win the competition, but because of his participation in the essay contest and the research that he did, he actually changed his major to water and is now working in the state of California in the water industry. And that was not his original path. So we've seen great success from these, and we would love to have some community support to keep supporting this progress program. And then finally, I cannot say enough good things about the agency and its support of our professional and personal development. Kenny and I are scheduled to go to the CAPIO Leadership Summit in about 6 weeks. And somehow I managed to be tapped to give a lesson on authentic leadership in public communication. My goal is to help inspire other communicators to lead their team with honesty, empathy, integrity, to bring value for the agencies for the public good. That is the end of my presentation. If there are any questions, I can answer them now, or you're welcome to contact the Public Information Office.
Questions? Yes, we need a microphone first. Hold on. Well, we have, but for the viewers online.
Yeah, my question is if you have any way, or even if it's possible, to measure some of the results of the conservation outreach that you do. In other words, is there a before and after picture that you can plausibly say our efforts made the difference here, or at least part of the difference?
We actually do. A recent video that Kenny put together is actually on one of our strategic partnerships. I want to say Paul Deal, and now the name of the agency is escaping me. What was the name of the agency? Thank you. Newberry Springs Economic Development. They were one of our strategic partners, and we helped fund a program for them. And they had measurable results. They grew a crop of food, garlic to be specific, and there were specific measurements that it used a lot less water to grow that crop than previously. So they have measurable results. Again, another result was the young man who ended up being our keynote speaker at one of our water summits, because he came back after he got his job in water. There are definitely measurable results. And there are some that we can't measure, that's for sure. But even just general awareness that we're here and what we do for our service area is that's a lot of what our social media is for. So you've got that social proof of what we're doing. You're welcome.
I would just add on to that one. When you're out there educating the youth, it just makes such a huge difference. The materials recycling facility that we run with Apple Valley, when they host a lot of kids out there, they see results in the coming months. They see patterns change where the contamination of what's being delivered out there just dramatically changes. And that's from their operations staff telling us that, you know, there's a marked difference. You educate the kids, they get the parents on board. They tell them what not to throw away, what to throw away. In this case, you know, turn the water off, do X, Y, and Z, and you're going to save water. It makes a big, it can have an impact for sure.
I just wanted to add, if you wanted another anecdotal evidence, my family found out about the agency through one of those classes, and I never would have known that they were hiring if it hadn't been for that. So just another point.
I did not know that. That just makes me so happy. Awesome.
Yeah, I would say I've been on the road show. It's great. And a lot of the other events that are put on, they're very educational and well worth your time to attend. So kudos to you and your staff.
Definitely a team effort. Thank you.
Okay. Updates, announcements, and comments carrying on. This is an opportunity for anybody to give an announcement, update, comment, anything going on with their agency, anything they want to share. Jeff, I knew you would have something.
Well, Jeff Gastra from Newberry Springs, real rural community. It's kind of hard to follow that nice, happy story because mine's kind of sad. One of my wife's former students, 17-year-old Tracy Hurgato, was attacked by a pack of dogs. Everybody here that lives in a rural community, you can kind of understand how that happens. At 6 a.m., she's running, trying to get fit for starting her senior high school year. And I think there was about 10 or 12 dogs that attacked her. Some of the pictures are too difficult to look at. She survived. She was down in Loma Linda for a couple of weeks. Anyways, the reason I brought that up is because we're such a small community, and that family could use some help. So there's a GoFundMe, and I'd be willing to share, you know, that info if you'd like. There's also an ABC News story about it. I can share that also, too. So you may have seen it already. It happened a couple of weeks ago on the 17th. So just a nice family. My wife actually has one of her siblings currently in her class. So anyways, that's kind of hard to get out because it's such a sad story.
Thank you, Jeff. Anybody else? Okay, we are always looking for more attendees, for sure. Get the word out of this committee. We're always looking for ideas of what you'd like to see for presentations, so please don't hesitate to reach out on that end as well. And with that, we will adjourn this meeting at 11:22 a.m. Thanks for your attendance.